Blog Talk Radio.
When I say straight, you say funk. Straight,
straight.
Wow. All right, that's what I'm talking about. Once again, you are tuned into Everybody Is a Star, and this is Patrice Chocolate Banks, your favorite flavor. Okay, and we are live on Tribe Family Channel. Now tonight, I decided to do something a little different. You know, I want to keep it interesting. You know what I'm saying? You know, remember when Tina said, Tina Turner I'm talking about, remember when she said, you know, sometimes we like to do things nice and rough and keep it rough, but then sometimes we start out nice and easy and then make it rough. So, you know, variety is the spice of life. So tonight, I'm doing a double header, okay? And I'm starting out tonight with my fellow funkalutionary, and I love him so much because he was the first one to jump on that funkalution train. And this brother, he's a DJ from Kansas City on 90.1 FM KKFI. And, you know, I'm just going to let him basically do it the way they do it in Kansas City. You know what I'm saying? I'm basically going to let him, like, do his thing, and I'm going to jump in every once in a while. And then when his segment is finished, after he finishes funking us up, we're going to move on to Mr. Grady Harrell, who is an entertainer supreme. That's all I can say. He's picking up where Jackie Wilson left off, okay? And don't try to act like you don't know who Jackie Wilson is. If you don't, then Google him, okay? So it's a lot going on tonight. I hope y'all are ready. I hope you had a wonderful week. And so, and I hope your week was funked up. And so right now we're getting ready to get started with Mr. Barry Jackson. Are you ready, my brother?
I'm ready. I was ready. I've been ready all day long.
Like my grandmother used to say, you don't get ready, you stay ready, right?
That's it. Don't get there just in time for the gig. Get there early.
Thank you, and be ready. So now let's just have, like, I've had you on the show before. For people who listened to it before, they know a little bit about you. But let's just start out where you got into the funk and how you became the DJ where you are right now. Let's talk about when the funk bug bit you. Let's talk about that.
Well, I mean, I grew up listening to one of our local radio stations here and listening to, on my way to school out here, old John L. Frazier and his friend Rufus the Rooster, and they used to funk it up early in the morning.
Wait a minute. His friends what?
His name, he had this rooster named Rufus.
Rufus, baby.
Yeah.
Okay.
He got Rufus would crow and let you know when the first call to breakfast was, when the second call to breakfast, the third call to breakfast. When that fourth call to breakfast came around, it was too late.
Woo.
Rufus and ate it all. Eat Rufus and tore breakfast up. And I mean, you know, he made sure that we had some James Brown.
Woo!
Made sure that we had Sly. Made sure that we had anything out of Motown. I mean, it wasn't this stuff. These shows where you just hear one kind of music, and you know that when you tune to that show, there's only one kind of music. But he made sure that everything we played, they played, was funky.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
about in your teens when this was going on?
Early teens, you know, from really starting about 12. And by the time I started learning how to play trombone, and I knew I wasn't going to play classical music, so, you know, get around the local musicians here, and, you know, especially the ones that had some experience, you know. People like James Gadson, one of those, you know, real funky drummer.
I know all about James Gadson. He's here in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
Know all about that brother.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, just having that little bit of influence there, you know, they told me what to listen to. And that, and I mean, of course, you know, seeing Sly on the Ed Sullivan Show and, you know, all the other TV shows that came on. I mean, that's when the funk started really getting the real exposure. And you couldn't get away from it. You couldn't get away from it at all, so I figured I might as well ride with it.
Well, you know, once that funk bug bites you, no, you can't get away from it because you're gonna be looking for it. You know what I'm saying? It's like an addiction. You know, once you get that injection, then you must be wherever the funk is at all times, and that's just all there is to it. So you started at about 12 years old, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it was just, you know, nothing you could do to get away from it. So, like I said, there's no point in fighting with it. I mean, with all the, you know, when you fast forward to what I'm doing now with KKFI as the Fusion Funk Meister,
wait a minute, say that, say that one more time.
I'm your Fusion Funk Meister.
You better go ahead on and say that. I like it.
See, you have to understand. Now, KKFI is just a community radio station. It's not a commercial station like, you know, some of the stations that all of us grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
That play a little bit of music and spent the rest of the time selling you stuff. This is
mm-hmm.
a station, it's a community station where people say we want to hear less talk, more music. We don't want to hear the regular news sources. We want to hear the news from, you know, from a place where they don't really want us to know anything. I mean, where they, you know, they want to go. Let me back up. They want the kind of news that you don't get anywhere else. That type of thing. But mainly, you get the music you don't hear anywhere else.
That's what I was just getting ready to say. That's what they want is the music that they, because, you know, I mean, you know, the commercial radio stations are so generic. You get so tired of that rotation. And let us mention that your program is called the Tuesday Midday Medley.
Yeah, because I come on just at the start of the early lunch hour.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are at work, but a lot of times, you know, people are riding through the city, taking care of business, or are about to go to lunch or what have you, and they need a little pick me up. You know, that your coffee is worn off that they had at breakfast.
Okay.
So it's my job to make sure. Now, if you've been drinking coffee all morning long, with my show, you might have a problem. Because I'm going to have your feet tapping so much it won't stop until well after you're on your way home during rush hour.
Okay. Well, the wonderful thing about the fact that, you know, about technology and online radio stations and all that is that, you know, it's just an avenue where people can, you know, that's why I know, that's why it is so popular, that's why people tune in, because they get to hear stuff that they want to hear as opposed to what they are held hostage hearing, you know, listening on, you know, commercial radio stations. And so that, you know, that's a wonderful thing. So we are not going to, we're going to get right into this. We're not going to hold this off any longer. We're going to get right into this because I want them to hear some what you have picked. Some of the things you do, we're going to pretend like we're in Kansas City. We're going to pretend like this is the midday. What is it, the midday?
The Tuesday midday medley.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to let you do your thing. And we're going to start out first with a song called Ain't It Funky Now, am I correct?
This is, you know, and this is old James Brown tune. But Joyce Duke did something to it that really got to me. I mean, you know, he maintained the integrity with horns and that kind of stuff and the little vocals here and there. But he did something that that only a few groups I've heard can really do with an upright bass. Now, we know what funk is with a bass guitar.
Right.
You take an upright, that upright bass, that straight acoustic bass, just grabbed me with the way, I don't know who's playing it, because I haven't looked on the CD in a long time, but, you know, it's just something about what, you know, some funky upright bass. That's, to me, that's pure, that's funk in its purest form.
And on top of that, anything George Duke is doing, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we about to hit it right now. Ain't it funky now? Bam, George Duke. Bam.
Thank you.
said, yeah. Okay, leave it to George. Leave it to George. Okay. So, listen,
know,
I want to get, wait a minute, I just want to say this. I forgot to mention that you do interviews. You've done numerous interviews on a long list of people. What was your last interview that you did? Let's talk about your let's name some of the people and talk about your last interview that you've done.
Okay, well, now, I've had George I've had on the show twice.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we were actually supposed to work on a third interview to talk so we could talk about the his last CD, Dreamweaver. And
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, though, he passed, and before we could get that, gone ahead and set a date and gone ahead and tape that interview. Loved talking with that brother because he was so knowledgeable, and he was really one of my inspirations when I came up with that on-air name, Fusion Funkmeister, because the man spanned all different types of music.
In fact,
it was through hearing him play fusion with drummer Billy Cobham is how I got introduced to George Duke. Even before I realized how funky he was, too. So, but then that was one reason why I knew I had to include, at least one tune by George.
Actually, you included more than one.
Well, yes, I did, as a matter of fact. And
mm-hmm.
we'll get to that one. And but the man played with everybody. I think one interview he did, he couldn't tell you how many recordings he's done.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
In some capacity. Go ahead.
Right. So I was just going to say, just give us some of the names. I know it's too many to list all of them, but the people that you've interviewed.
Well, several current and former members of Tower of Power. In fact, the leader, Emilio Castillo, was the first interview that I recorded. But just before I actually got the show, the Tuesday Midday Medley. And I've had Carlos Santana on. I've had Larry Graham. I've had Ramsey Lewis, Roy Ayers. I've had a lot of people who, if you look on the, if you, you know, when you check out the credits on your records, you may see them there, but you don't know them as headliners necessarily, like bass player Larry Kempell. Alfonso Johnson, and I don't know who doesn't know him, really. That's a brother that's very much in demand. I've had Marcus Miller on.
So who was your most recent person that you interviewed?
The most recent one was keyboardist Brian Auger. I just did one with him 2 weeks ago, and that one started out, I said, I always say, hey, I don't want the interview to go more than 15 or 20 minutes. But, boy, we get to conversation. And when I got through with editing that one, to so it would flow real well on radio, I think
right.
It was about 30, it was about 30 minutes long. I did one with guitarist John McLaughlin that lasted an hour and a half. Because all I had to do was mention all that. I was on a quest to get as many people who played with Miles Davis as possible because of the way Miles changed music, the way he did, and boy, I mentioned his time with John McLaughlin, and he just took off. And that's great because that's what you want.
Exactly what you want, and plus, I just want to tell you that you forgot to mention on your list of people that you interviewed, yours truly, because you did interview. There you go. But that's all right, though. That's all right. I know it's so many people. It's all right.
I definitely had.
But we're going to tell the world. Go ahead.
I definitely had Patrice Chocolate Banks.
Thanks.
And she brought the straight funk, I'm here to tell you.
With no chaser.
And you didn't hear me say on the rocks or with a spritz or nothing. This was
nothing.
Definitely straight, with no chaser. And it was an enjoyable conversation.
It was, and that's when I fell in love with you, and you stuck with me. I just want you to know that there ain't nothing you can do to get rid of me at this point, unless your wife or something, you know, gets involved or, you know, whatever. So now, the second song, what are we going to play next?
I want to get to do something by Victor Wooten, bass player. You know, this is a brother who I think is probably one of the more underrated bass players in the music industry. He's played with everybody. He's played with everybody. He has a great music camp that he has down in Tennessee. He's one of five brothers who can play the heck out of some music and can funk
now,
it up.
Now, what's the name of this song?
The name of the song is Brooklyn, and it's from a couple of years ago. He did did two CDs at once with the same music. The difference is one was all instrumental, the other one added vocals.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is from one album was called Sword and Stone, and then he did the other one with the vocals where he added vocals. It was called name of the CD was Words and Tones. But he's got basically this, you know, the same song titles on there. And this one is called Brooklyn. And I really like the vocals on it, but I love his bass technique and the people that gets to put it with him.
Yeah, I really like this too, because, you know, New York is one of my favorite places. I couldn't live there, but I sure could visit there for about 3 weeks and shop, you know, till I drop. I could definitely do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So here we go with Brooklyn. I like this. So you want to drop that one? You want to introduce it right quick? Bam. Let's go.
All right. This is from the CD Words and Tones by Victor Wooten. This tune is called Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Ooh.
see, what I like about that song more than anything else is the vibe. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I've been to Brooklyn. So just hearing, you know, the lyrics and the whole vibe of it, even if you haven't been to Brooklyn, the way they're singing about it and playing about it, it makes you feel like either you want to go there or you can relate to, like, your own neighborhood. Wherever you may live, you may feel that same way about where you live. You know what I'm saying? And that's a great song. That was a good choice. You get a gold star for that one, Barry Jackson.
Well,
you get a gold star, my brother. Now, we got a phone call.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, what I was just going to say, it goes back to talking about somebody like a Victor Wooten. He's been on the show a couple of times, and he comes to Kansas City quite often, or the Kansas City area. And, you know, it's with concert with Victor Wooten is more than just hearing the music. You know, he's not doing any theatrics or anything, but he's just a laid back enough person that it permeates through the entire crowd. Even if he's just and that's the kind of musicians I really love being around.
Me too. I hear you. Just plant both feet on the ground and just go ahead on and do whatever you're going to do. And it's going to come across. You don't need a whole bunch of theatrics. You don't need a circus. You don't need any of that. You know what I'm saying? The music is going to come across to the people. You ready to take this phone call?
Sure.
Area code 646. Area code 646, you there? Sometimes they get tired of waiting and they hang up. I don't know why they do that. I'm gonna give them one more time chance. Area code 646, you there? Okay, so they're not there. Good. Okay, so call back 646. Call back. So now we're gonna move on. Let's go to. But first, before we move on, here's what I want to know. When I come to Kansas City, what is the best soul food restaurant to go to?
Probably Peachtree Restaurant.
Peachtree, like in Atlanta? They got a Peachtree in Kansas City? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So
that's where you can really sit out and get down, I'm here to tell you.
Okay, what's your favorite dish?
My favorite there is probably it runs between the baked chicken and maybe a whole catfish.
Ooh, that sounds good. My husband catfish is his favorite.
And gotta have some of that peach cobbler for dessert.
Some of that peach cobbler?
Gotta have it.
All righty. Because everywhere
it.
I go, the first thing I ask whoever I meet is where is a soul food restaurant with the good food, and where can I go shopping? Those are my two questions right there. And if I'm in some place where they don't speak English, those are the first two things that I learn how to say wherever I am. Where do I go eat? Where do I go shop? You feel me?
Well, but you can't leave Kansas. If you leave Kansas City without talking about some barbecue, though.
Oh, but wait a minute, though. But it can't compare to Texas barbecue, but we're not going to debate that.
Really?
We're not going to debate that.
Well, I was just going to say, every part of the country that does barbecue, they're good at certain things that may really make them stand out. And what I know about, Texas is they probably do beef better than anybody anywhere else around the country. But if it's going to be some ribs, I got to go to Gates right here in Kansas City, though.
Which one? What's the name of it?
Gates. Gates and Sons Barbecue.
Okay. All right. This could take us the rest of the show to talk about that. So we're not going to talk about that. But I'm going to take your word for it. When I come to Kansas City, that's what I'm going to do. And and we're going to take it from there. Now, the next song we're going to do is, let me see. I think we have time to do this Hard Working.
Bobby Lyle.
I met him through Wayne Henderson. I used to do a lot of work with Wayne Henderson, a lot of any project he was doing, he would call me on, and he would also call Bobby Lyle on most of his projects, too. So we've done a lot of work together. So tell us about this Hard-Working Man right quick.
Hard-Working Man is from Bobby Lyle's latest CD, The Way I Feel. And you mentioned Wayne Henderson, and that's who really inspired me as far as playing trombone. Once I heard the Jazz Crusaders, and they do a version of Love Is Blue with a, you know, with that, that has that same quality as that Ain't It Funky Now by George Duke. That bass sets that tune off. But we're talking about Joe Sample and company there. But I got hit to Bobby Lyle through the work that Wayne Henderson did with people like Ronnie Laws.
I just want to say, you mentioned Ronnie Laws. They're from Texas, but I wrote while working with Wayne. I wrote a song on one of Ronnie Laws' album called Night Something. And anyway, the song is called Junior Boy. So that's just some trivia for you. The song is called Junior Boy, Ronnie Laws. The album is called Night Breezes, I want to say, something like that. But anyway, that's for you to go dig up and listen to.
You know I will.
I know you will. It's called Junior Boy. And I wrote
I got to meet Bobby this past a few months ago when he was here in town. Came here with Pieces of a Dream. And they did a tribute to George. And you go on my Facebook page. I think I got a picture with Bobby. But when I heard this one, I'd never heard him play organ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know him. Know him on that Friend of Rhodes piano, and when I heard this one, I said, "Yeah, I gotta have this one too."
Bobby Lyle mm-hmm. is a bad, bad boy, and what we're bringing is true school. You know what I'm saying? And you and I, what we're bringing, mm-hmm. we're on the same mission to bring that true school, the same mission. The Funkalutionary mission to make sure everybody knows where it came from. You know what I'm saying? Where the foundation. So introduce this song, Hard Working Man.
Hey, this is from the CD, The Way I Feel. And this is Bobby Lyle and Hard Working Man.
Bam. Hey, well, I know what was hard working. That organ was hard working. Okay.
Oh,
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know that brother could throw quite down on a. That's a B3, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know he
yeah.
could throw down like that.
I didn't.
You better go,
different.
Bobby Lyon. You better.
I mean,
go. Whoa.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Dude.
He left
Whoa.
Everything on. He left everything in the studio when he did that one.
Wow. I like
mm-hmm.
that one. I like that one. I bet my last money it's been a stone gas, honey.
I mean, because
okay.
he puts me in mind of Jimmy Smith.
He is working that B3. So, believe it or not, our time is almost up. So, you got any? Just let me ask you this: What would you say about funk music, and briefly about funk music and what we must do to keep it alive?
Well, what we must do, one thing, let's do what we can to encourage our musicians that play locally. You know, it's like people want you to eat local and eat organic. Let them know that, you know, funk is the most organic form of music, and we need to encourage our young people to listen to more of it. So they can, you know, since we really love live music here in this town, because, you know, without my little foray into playing in bands and stuff, this is the way I put my show together the way we used to put our set list together, and
okay.
you know, and the bands played in. But you know, we need our young people to hear more, you know, as much of this funk as possible, and you know, because just how organic it is, you know,
absolutely
doesn't need a whole lot of machines, although they have their place. You know, they definitely you know, the drum machine definitely had its place with Grand Central Station. It wasn't the fact that it was there, but it was how it was used. And
okay,
how it fit in with
that's
everything.
Right.
How it
that's
fit,
right.
You know, how it fit in with everything. So,
right.
You know, we need our young people to really understand. The other thing, they also need to pay attention to some blues, too, because there's a heavy blues element in funk.
Thank you.
There is a heavy blues element, you know. That was something that George really pounded to me whenever we have our conversations.
Right, absolutely.
You know,
well, you know, it all started with the great-great-grandmother who was
mm-hmm.
gospel. And so, you know, that's mm-hmm. another show. You know, the history of music, period. Not black music, but music, period, in
yeah.
the United States, okay?
Yeah.
We'll do that one another time. But in the meantime, we got this one last song we're getting ready to play. That's right.
Oh,
can you tell us? And I want to tell you that thank you so much. I know there are so many other things you could be doing.
Oh.
So I appreciate the fact that you have spent this time with your sister. So
okay.
now
no
tell
problem.
Me about Let's Ride.
This is a tune by, it's by Waymon Tisdale. And this is from his album, the CD, The Funk Record. You know, Waymon, former NBA forward, and you know, he became a smooth jazz bass player and what have you, and got around some real icons like a Stanley Clarke and like George Duke and George Clinton. In fact, George Clinton and George Duke are on this record, this particular song, "Let's Ride." He also had Ollie Woodson on there on the record.
Oh,
And I can't remember who else, but what I like about it, this one gives the epitome of, you know, you hear the elements of Sly, the Ohio Players, Parliament Funkadelic, you know, the really, you know, all the bands that we really came to listen to when we were really into the funk. And he pulled all of those influences together, you know.
Okay.
And this came out after Waymon passed away in 2009. But his wife was dedicated to seeing the production of this record go all the way through. So,
okay.
That's somebody, you know, if you want to know any more about Waymon and what he did, that I think his wife would be somebody to talk with down the road.
You know
what?
That's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. And,
I want to say, okay, go ahead.
Well, no, you go ahead. It's your show, sister.
No, it's your show. I mean, this portion is your show. I just want to thank you once again for rolling with us, sister, tonight and bringing some stuff that I haven't heard, and broadening my horizons, and hopefully everybody that's listening tonight, to everybody who's a star, that's what I'm doing. That's what this is all about, to teach, you know what I'm saying, to keep that legacy alive. So I appreciate you, and I thank you. And any last words and pardon?
Well, just to say that I thank you for allowing me to come on and spend a little time with all the all the other Funkalutionaries, and and I want to thank all of my Fusion Funkateers for showing up and hanging out and listening. A lot of times they hear enough of me and talk to me enough on Facebook and on the air and what have you. But I hope that they enjoyed, the little exchange we've had, and hope they continue to, stay tuned because of
your
next segment coming up.
Absolutely. Stay tuned. That's right, y'all, because we got more coming up, and you're going to learn more, and I'm just excited. I'm excited about the whole thing, and Barry Jackson, he is my brother from another mother. So we are going to go out right now on, he just told you, everybody that's playing on Let's Ride. So we're going to ride it on out. Okay, Barry, smooches.
All right, you too, sister.
All right.
You with us? Man, give me the keys to the deuce and the quarter, please. Now let's ride. Dipping into this groove, oh yeah. Lately I've been slipping, cause I've been pimping this funky move. Oh Lord, hey,
hit me, sucker.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hi there, everybody. We had a little technical difficulty, but we are back, and we are back with Mr. Grady Harrell. Grady, yay!
Yes.
I wish I had
a
track
Grady.
With
yes, how you
with
doing?
With everybody screaming and hollering. I am doing so good. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Try on Everybody is a Star. Now, this is what we're going to do. We're going to get right into it. I want to start from the beginning, okay, and get as much information. I'm going to try to squeeze blood out of a turnip, okay?
Okay, that's good. Sounds good.
Okay, now, let's start from the beginning. So where did you hail from? Where were you born? Where did you come from?
I was born and raised in Los Angeles, California. I was born at General Hospital downtown L.A. And
what?
Yeah, man, been in L.A. all my life. Well, I've just been in Vegas for the last 8 years.
Mhm.
Yeah, so L.A. is my hometown.
It's just so rare to find people who were actually born in L.A. You know, they come from all over the world.
I've been hearing that, dear, for 100 years. So
I know you have.
It's
true.
Yeah, I'm one of the few who's actually born and raised in L.A.
All right. So now I have to have you shout out all your schools, you know what I'm saying, because my listeners, they have to, you know, they like it when they shout, you know, when they know that whoever it is they're listening to might have gone to the same school they went to. So let's start from the beginning, elementary school all the way through to high school, college, if you went to college.
Hey, man. I want to shout out to Sienega Elementary School, Arlington Heights Elementary, Mount Vernon Junior High School, and Dorsey High, home of the Dons, man.
Yeah. No, you didn't go to Dorsey?
Man, I went to Dorsey.
To Dorsey. I'm a Dorsey Dama. I'm a Dama.
We family. Hey, why don't I ever see you at none of the reunion dances?
That's a long story.
Okay, all right, we won't go into that. But yeah, I'm a class of
75.
I'm a Dorsey
Dama.
Yeah, I'm a Dorsey.
Yay! So,
yeah,
so you lived over in the hood then, over there around in that area?
La Brea and Adams. That's my spot. La Brea and Adams.
Oh man, you know what? We got milk.
Yeah. Yep. You know the town, Maverick Flat, the apartment, Total Experience. Come on, you know all them places.
You know I know.
Yeah.
Now you forgot the checkmate.
Oh yeah, that's right.
and you forgot Guys and Dolls.
Man. Hey, remember when you were coming up? Remember when we was coming up before you went big time and got with Grand Central Station and all those spots that we used to party at, and there were so many wonderful bands coming up. It's not like that anymore, huh?
No, it's not like that anymore. But, you know, my hangout was Mavic Flat. That's where I used to go.
Yeah.
And I had a group called New Perspectives, and we used to play over at the Checkmate. But Mavic Flat is where everybody came through Mavic Flat. I mean,
everybody,
that was like, everybody would shed it there. You know, I mean, everybody from A to Z, okay? So now, okay. But anyway, what were your first musical influences? When did you know that music was something that you had to do?
Hey, man, it's like it's on my mind every day. I was 8 years old, and I heard, "You really got a hold on me." And I said, "What is that?" I just heard that voice.
And you were eight?
I was eight or 9 years old, and I heard Smokey.
Okay.
And so that's when I started woodshedding. And, of course, we're talking of times where there was no videos, there was no video games. All there was a little record player and those 45s. And I got those 45s, really got a hold of me, and I learned how to be Smokey. I learned his voice. And I taught myself how to sing. So all the Smokey songs, I wanted to be Smokey Robinson. And You Really Got a Hold on Me is what really got me started.
I heard that. So listen, how did your family, like your mom and dad, how did they receive that? You know, because a lot of times, you know, back in the day, it was about music is cute and all that. It's something that we do in church every Sunday, but you need to get a real job. So how did your family receive you being invested in music?
Well, it's deep because I come from a musical family. My grandmother was into opera. She was an opera singer. I used to go to her recitals. My mother was a soul singer. She sang background in a couple of Lil Willie John's songs, and she was rehearsing to become a member of the Friends of Distinction, but she got pregnant with my brother, and she got out. Right after she got out, they hit it big with their first single, Grazing in the Grass, whatever their first single was. But my mother,
right.
I remember them rehearsing in my living room. So my mother, she knew, I think, in me and my sister Raquel. My sister Raquel sang with Diana Ross for 14 years. So we grew up with music in the household. And my mother, she always tells me now that when I was in the room, woodshed, by myself, listening to Smokey Robinson, she said at that time I drove her crazy, but she knew that I was not in the street getting into trouble.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. So the Friends of Distinction.
Yeah.
Oh, man, so it's in your DNA.
It's in my DNA.
It is in your DNA. So after high school, did you go to college, or how did your career start? What happened after Dorsey?
Well, you know, even at Dorsey, my sister, we had a group called Papa's Results when I was like 16 years old. And we started singing at Maverick's Flat when I was underage because my uncle Don King, he was our bass player, my mother's little brother, he had to be my sister and my guardian. So we were singing at Maverick's Flat with the likes of Lakeside and Platypus and Beverly Hills, who Howard Hewitt was lead singer, him and Robert DeBlanc, and Richard Pryor was up in there, the Whispers, Chaka Khan.
Everybody.
We were a regular stable down at Maverick's Flat. Every other weekend we play there, and we would do four shows a night, Friday and Saturday and Sunday. So by the time I graduated high school, I went to LACC for a minute. I got into college, and I took a lot of music classes, and my sister and I. But then after that, our schedule got so busy performing and stuff, I didn't stay in college long, and we were just on that circuit, just like all those entertainers at the time in the 70s.
Right, right. And so funny, your story might as well be my story, because I did the same thing. I was like at Maverick's Flat, you know, woodshedding, checkmates, woodshedding, and then got my first professional gig, and I went to LACC for about a month, because my mama told me, okay, you have to get a job, or go to school. So I said, okay, well, let me go on up here to LACC right quick, see. And so I was up there faking the funk at LACC.
Right.
And then for about a month, and then I got my first gig, and that was it. So it sounds like the exact same thing happened to you.
Exactly. Yep, exactly.
Exactly.
And we were all around those so many beautiful musicians, the Brothers Johnson, Lakeside. I mean, as you know, we come from a wonderful heritage of so many wonderful musicians. Some of us went on to make it big. Some of us not so big, but I'm still here to talk about it. I didn't make it really big, even like all the stuff that I grew up, you know, after high school listening to you when you were with Grand Central Station and those wonderful songs you did. And I was like, and it's funny, I'm talking to you right now because I love your voice, always have.
Well, the thing about it is, Grady, that's why I'm doing this show, Everybody is a Star, because you know what? It's not all about that person that was out in front, because, you know, you cannot do it by yourself. There is a supporting cast. There are people who, like, without them, you would not be able to make it. And there are people like you who have been out here forever and who have been, like hypnotizing audiences forever, but not really, as far as I'm concerned, received all the acclaim that you deserve. But see, that's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for. I'm here to let people know about Grady Harrell, baby, because I know all about it. Well, I know a lot, not all maybe, but a lot. And so I want to make sure that I'm doing my part, you know, as somebody that's carrying the funk torch, okay? Yeah. So now.
All of us musicians appreciate you.
Well, thank you very much. So since you mentioned you really got a hold on me and Smokey, that's going to be one of the first songs I'm getting ready to play because, I love Smokey too. So let's go and listen to Smokey saying you really got a hold on me. Bam.
Yeah, man.
As far as I'm concerned, him and Sly are two of the greatest poets that ever lived. You know what I'm saying? Their lyric, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're right. That's Sly Stone.
Woo! Okay. So now, you were doing gigs around town, hitting all the clubs around town. So now, when did your career move on to the next level?
It moved, so many levels in my career. So, I was with my group, Papa's Results, my sister, and three other guys, and Aretha Franklin and her sister Carolyn started managing us, and we just knew at that time we'd go hit the big time. And
You got a backup. So how did you hook up with Aretha?
You know what? It's crazy because I don't remember. I know that I was hanging with her son, Eddie Franklin, a lot. We danced on Soul Train together, me and Eddie. And maybe Eddie told his auntie about it, And then Carolyn came over to our house on Orange Drive in La Brea, and she saw us. We did it right there in my mother's living room. And she went back to Aretha, and then we did a showcase for Aretha. I forget where it was, somewhere in Venice, on Venice. And we did that showcase. It was in the papers and everything. I still got, you know, clips of the paper. And we did it. Aretha went crazy. She liked us. We signed. And Aretha, thing she wanted to make very clear was that Carolyn was going to be handling everything, because she said, I'm doing my own career now. Carolyn's going to handle everything, but whatever Carolyn needs, I'm going to be right there for you guys. So
okay.
She tried, you know, to take us as far as she could. We even performed at her reception when she married Glenn Turman in 1979. Yeah, we performed there, and Gene Page was the MD, and Greg Phillinganes was on piano, and we opened up for the Four Tops. It was incredible. Aretha had a wonderful reception. And then
well, let me ask you this. What was it like meeting Aretha Franklin? Tell me about that.
It's so incredible, because I used to always go to her house anyway up in Encino when she was living in Encino, because me and Tony were friends. So being around Aretha Franklin was incredible. And I'll tell you, her day was like this. She'd get up in the morning, she'd go in the kitchen, and she always have soul food in the kitchen. Her cook always kept soul food all in the kitchen, just all in plastic, those aluminum things. It was like it was catered every day at her house, right? So Aretha would get up, and at that time, she was smoking cigarettes quite a bit. So she'd get up, smoking her cigarettes. We'd have that. And she had this big old sprawling mansion in Encino. So she'd get up, go to the kitchen, get a big old, I could see why she gained weight back in the 70s like she did. She'd get a big old plate of food, and the next thing she'd do, girl, is go sit at the piano and play for about an hour. That was, and then she'd go upstairs, and she left the downstairs to us. So we'd swim, and we'd have all kind of fun in the 70s. And she'd get up again, go back to the kitchen, eat some more, and go sit back on the piano with her cigarette and play the piano, and it was incredible. It was like, this is Aretha Franklin, and she was so cool to be around. Aretha had four boys. She had Kelp, Teddy, Clarence, and Eddie, and so she just catered to her boys. She loved her son and all her son's friends, and we was always over there swimming and just hanging out at her house, so it was beautiful.
Wow. Now, you know, that's something right there that I don't know how many people can say is that they got to be at Aretha Franklin's house, like, on a regular basis, you know what I'm saying, hanging out. So, and I'm sure while she was playing her piano, she was singing, right?
Oh, boy, was she. It was like heavy.
Okay, so now, were you listening or were you playing with the boys? What were you doing?
No, you know, See, Aretha knew that I was a musician, and it's funny because I used to always talk to her and be sitting right by the piano. Like we got to talk about Stevie when he did some songs on my album. But Aretha, you know, anybody like you and I, how are we going to be around somebody great like that and not just sit and listen to him?
Right.
And that's what I did. I would sit and listen to her, and she was just – didn't do it. Aretha never did a lot of talking. She just sit there and play, and I sit there and listen, and that was it.
Okay, studying. Yeah. I hear you, Grady. I hear you, because that's what I would have been. That's exactly what I would have been doing right there, listening to Aretha, because, baby, I'm telling you, none other, none before, none since. Okay,
right.
So now, we were talking about your career going to the next level.
Yes. So, okay, after the group disbanded, my sister went on the road with Diana Ross. She got a chance to go on the road with Diana in, like, 1979 or 1980. And then our group disbanded. So what to do? I put together another band with Chaka Khan's little brother, Mark Stevens, playing bass with me, and we were called Image. And so we were doing a lot of shows around L.A., but not on the same level as when we were doing the shows at Mavericks, because clubs kind of started dying down in the 80s, right?
So right.
I did that for a minute. Then I got a call from, before, right when my sister left in 79 to go with Diana, I got a call from Jody from Jeffrey Daniel in New York. At that time, they had a guy named Gerald singing lead. He's the one that sang lead on Take That to the Bank, Shalimar. Well, obviously, they had some misunderstandings. Gerald didn't want to sing with him anymore. Jeffrey called me and said, hey, Grady, I want me and Jody, because I dance on Soul Train with them, and they used to always come to my shows at Maverick's Flat before they even had a group. They were just dancers then. And Jeffrey called me and said, Jody and I know we want you. We want you to be the next member. Gerald's going to be gone. This was on a Thursday. I remember it. I was in my mother's house on Orange Drive, and he said that but you got to go down to Solar Records, meet with Dick Griffey, meet with Leon Silvers, which I did. Dick Griffey put me in his big old BMW at that time. We rolled around L.A. and Hollywood, and we were talking. And Leon, I think I met Leon either the next night or whatever. And Jeffrey told me, Grady, if you get the gig, you're going to be here 2 days from now, which is Saturday. That's how much we need you. If you don't get the gig, you won't be here. The other guy will be here. Well, I didn't know at that time the other guy was Howard Hewitt, because I knew Howard. So all I knew was Jeffrey called me, and I told my mother, I said, Mom, what should I do? She's like, go for it. So I went, I sang for Leon, and I remember the track he wanted me to sing on. It was Right There in the Side. It was funny. So we were riding around, and so I, you know the rest of that story. You know who got it. Howard got it. So
Howard got it.
They made a great choice, because at that time, vocally, I was not as bad as Howard at that time. You know how we grow vocally? Well, Howard was eons ahead of me vocally. And when I hear all their old stuff, I'm like, they made the right choice. They know what they were doing. Because I was still on my trying to be Michael Jackson tip vocally. You know what I'm saying? So after that, I met this African lady, and she took me on a whole nother level. She put a whole lot of money into my career, and my first album was produced by Fred Wesley of the JBs, and that's a whole nother story. It's like, this is so deep. It gets deep when I met this African woman. Her husband was the president of Gabon. His name is Omar Bongo. Well, his wife loved my voice. Her name was Josephine Bongo, and she put all the money into my first album, and my first single she made, the video was called Belinda, Belinda. It was kind of like that African feel, because she's African, so she wrote the song, and Fred Wesley, I didn't even know who Fred Wesley, this is how naive I was, Chocolate, I didn't even know that Fred Wesley, when I met him in 1984, that he was with the JB, and so he met me, and he's like, and we just bonded, and we did two albums together, and she put all the money in it. It was like money, her husband's face is on the money. And he was a president out there in Gabon for 40-something years. He died about 6 years ago. Well, she made that album, and I had so many beautiful musicians on in 1984. Well, we took the album to Dick Griffey, none other than Dick Griffey. He released the album on his Constellation record label. And Belinda was, I was one of the first artists on BET when they first started. And that was when I first got my first recording contract with Constellation Records.
And how did that make you feel?
It was living a dream, because I was with this lady who had so much money, Chocolate. I mean, money was nothing to her. She bought me this big mansion, Rolls Royce, Mercedes. I didn't even know. I came up from the hood. So many Rolex watches, I don't even remember that. I was in a club up in Hollywood and at the, Carlos and Charlie's. And Arsenio, before
So
Arsenio would come up to me, and him and Eddie Murphy would look at my jewels that she had, like, Grady, what the hell is this? I didn't even know. And all the, I mean, you know everybody and anybody, honey, and Carlos and Charlie. So
everybody. Oh, man, I have forgotten. You just brought a whole, like, I got a headache when that gear moves. Carlos Charlie, baby.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we at that time, it was 1984, 85, 86. And then we released another album. I think Belinda went to number 28 on the R&B charts. And Dick Griffey, they really didn't promote it too well, because MCA was the distributor. But I still see that album, Moana. Mwana is M-W-A-N-A. That's my middle name in a Swahili language. My middle name
okay.
is Baby, Grady Baby Harrell. Well, in her
okay.
Batiki language, Mwana is Baby. So she named the
That's
album
That's
your
real
Mwana.
Middle name?
Yeah, that
baby,
was my father's
your
name,
mama
Grady
name.
Baby Harrell. No, my
Stop
grandmother
it.
Named my father that. I said, Grandma, why'd you name my daddy Grady Baby? She said, Grady Junior, that's my baby. So that's why I named y'all. Okay, Grandma. So I'm Grady Baby Junior, and my son is Grady
heard.
Baby the Third.
You better. I heard that. Okay.
Yeah,
we have, so I'm trying to cover so much. Now, this next song that I want to play, I found it on YouTube, and I want to play it because when I heard it and saw it, it reminded me so much of probably every singer, everybody who
yeah.
sings, whenever they get together with their families, like every family gathering I have, we all end up singing. Me, my kids, my grandkids, my mama, everybody, we all end up singing. And when I saw this on YouTube with your family singing, I said, I have got to put this up because this is beautiful. This is what it's about. Now, BBJ, who is the wizardress, of
mm-hmm.
Tribe Family Channel. I want you
right.
to know, BJ, that this is titled Grady Harrell, this song that we're getting ready to play, okay? So we're getting ready to listen
yes.
to you and your family just impromptu, just getting
yes.
down like y'all usually do.
Right.
Singing
right.
the Soul Stirrers song, Sam
yeah.
Cooke.
Okay, uh-huh.
here we go.
All right.
We're going to do a song that I taught these guys when they're about this age. It's one of the classics from Mr. Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers. It simply goes like this.
Whoa, Lord, the time is going by. When I'm as free, my last breath is high.
With my family, you know, mostly around the holiday times when everybody gets together. So that was awesome, Greg. That was awesome.
Yeah,
now,
we have a good time all the time.
And your sons, I want you to know that I looked at the reality show you guys had. What was the name of it? I can't think of it right now.
Brothers to Brother.
I looked at it on a regular basis. And your sons, can sing, but it's in the DNA. It's in the DNA, and that's all there is to it. And so I'm sure that you were, they looked up to you. It's obvious that they looked up to you, and they are wonderful. I'm playing a song later with all of them in it. But right now, what I want to talk about is what did it feel like to get that role as Jackie Wilson in the Jacksons and American Dream. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was like incredible because I've always, like all of us, we grew up loving the Jackson 5 because they were kids like we were, and they made it big like we were trying to do as kids. But I was actually never auditioned for that role. I was taking all my kids because I got 7 sons, right, and I got 3 daughters. And so I was taking them because Tony Jones, Suzanne DePass's manager, Suzanne DePass's cousin, Tony Jones, was my manager when my record Sticks and Stones came out, RCA Records, in 1989. And he already had told me that the auditions were taking place, so he called me and he told me, I want you, before it gets to be a cattle call, I want you to bring your boys by and have first dibs on these auditions. And that's what I did. I was taking my kids down there to auditions, and they were calling back. And one day they said, we want to see Anthony playing Michael as this age. We'll see Lil Grady playing Jackie at this age. And Jermaine thought that you looked a lot like Jackie Wilson. Do you know any Jackie Wilson songs? And I'm like, what? I said, well, I can learn a Jackie Wilson song. So I did. And the next day I went in and I sang for Katherine Jackson, Jermaine, and his wife at the time, Margaret, and the lady who was directing it. And we filmed it downtown L.A., and I got it finished in like 2 hours. And, you know, there was like, I guess there was Debbie Allen and Suzanne DePass was making a bet, like, I bet we go into like 6 or 7 hours. And my best friend was there, and he bet him like, no, I bet Grady finished this in 2 hours. So he won the bet because we finished it in 2 hours. It was so fast. Because I knew I did my homework, and it was incredible.
Right.
And there was talk about me doing the Jackie Wilson story. Debbie Allen had bought the script, and Jermaine had came to me and said, Grady, you got this. Don't worry about it. But, of course, we know how Hollywood is, and it never went down. So, but it was great doing it and meeting all the Jacksons and them. Everybody came on the set except Michael. But it was incredible doing it. I loved it. I still love it. That made me a lot of money because after I did that, I did a stage play traveling around playing Jackie Wilson for years.
Okay. Now, somebody need to come on and do Jackie Wilson's life story. Mm-hmm. I don't know what takes them so long. And when they do it, you are the one that definitely needs to be Jackie Wilson. For sure.
I hope they do it before I get too old.
What?
Oh, by the way, that was my son. If anybody out there saw the Jackson miniseries, my son Anthony, even though he didn't get an on-camera role, that's him singing all the tracks of young Michael Jackson. My son Anthony Harrell, that's him singing from when Michael was 5 years old up until he was 14 years old. That's my son's voice you hear.
I heard that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, though, we're going to get, I want to just say about Jackie Wilson, you do have that whole vibe, that whole Jackie Wilson vibe, because my mom, she was a Jackie Wilson fan, and you know, as you know, back in the day, most black women were, and so she had his albums and stuff, and so I used to sneak and listen to his albums and stuff, and of course he would be on the album covers, and so there is no other person that I could think of that would be a better Jackie Wilson than you, because you know I was watching you on this song that I just got through playing. You have some of his mannerisms, you know what I'm saying? So So from my mouth to God's ears, you know, because how can you not have some kind of documentary or some kind of story, a movie or something about Jackie Wilson? How can you not do that?
I'm telling you. And I've learned how to, I've like, my soul is like just singing a song like, well, goodbye. So I can make my voice sound like Jackie.
You can. I know you can. Now listen, but before they did this, had you did you know, were you into Jackie Wilson at all, or did you just
not.
Get into it? Not
no,
at all.
No, because the thing is, exactly, when I before I did it, I didn't do my research. So when I did actually went in the studio with my boy, I forget the musical director. He used to be musical director on Dancing with the Stars, Harold Wheeler. Harold Wheeler was the musical director for the Jackson miniseries. When I went into the studio, they didn't think I could sing. They said, you look like him, but if you don't sing, we're going to call Howard Hunsberry into singing. So I went in, and I just sing. I sing it like Grady Harrell or Michael Jackson. Hey, you, come out of here on the floor. And I sing it like
yeah.
that if you hear the track. But then when I after I filmed it, I started doing my research. And then I said, Jackie sounds like a cross between Pavarotti and an R&B singer. So it's like, hey, you, come out of here on the floor. You see the difference? Let's rock
right,
and roll.
Right.
So
right.
It's not. It was like I saw that and I put that little thing on my voice like that, and then it came, and that's why I got it.
And you know what? And here's what I'm getting ready to say. In case y'all don't know who Pavarotti is, Google him, okay?
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm saying. You knew enough to know that that's what you needed to do.
Exactly. And that helped
you
me
know what
so
I'm saying?
Much. Yeah.
And that
it's
helped
authentic.
You.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And you, I loved it. I loved it. Every time it comes on TV, my daughter, she looks at it. She's a Michael Jackson freak. So every
right.
time that movie comes on, she looks at it. And so you did your thing, my brother. And see, that's what
thank
I'm,
you, baby.
You know, this is what's very important in these days and times to those who are up and coming is, you know, they're used to everything coming quick and fast, but really the real deal is if you are interested in longevity, if you are interested in being somebody that will be remembered, you have to study. You have to woodshed. You have to do what it takes to, successful. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because it just doesn't come overnight. You got to study. They don't want to hear that these days, Grady.
I know. And
they don't want to hear it. They want it quick, fast. They want
yeah.
it quick, fast, and in a hurry. But no, it don't come that way. If you want it to last, you have to study. Here this man is. He didn't know who Jackie Wilson was, but he
right.
studied. He got it. And ended up with that part. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to put your grind on and do what
yeah.
you need. You know what I'm saying? Am I right or am I wrong?
You're so right. And a lot of kids, but that's how we grew up. And I would never want to grow up any other way. And I'm sure you feel the same way. The way we grew up, we was putting the grind in. We was out there doing it. You and I and musicians like Brother Graham and Preston Glass, my good friend, and so I can go down the road of list of all these beautiful musicians and writers that I had the blessing of meeting all these years, like my good friend Preston Glass, who then wrote so many songs, and I'm going to his listening party on May the 12th. He put his own album out. He done wrote for so many people, and he's
so many people
brother.
For so long.
Yeah.
I know Preston. He's married to somebody I've been knowing since she was a little girl.
I know. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you got to get him on the show, Chaka. You really do, because he's such a good brother. Him and Gina, those are my people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'm see what I can do about that. So now, here you are in a movie. A successful movie, might I add. So,
right.
you know, what was this doing? Because you were still, you know, young. So what was
yeah.
what was this doing to you, and how was this affecting you as far as your ego? And, you know, because when we're young, you know, we don't look at things the same way as we do after we have gathered some experience. So
yeah.
Is there anything you would have done different?
You know what? I come from a strong mother who raised five kids by herself. My dad, he was a heroin addict. He got on heroin when he was 14 years old, bless his heart, and he passed in 86 because he couldn't kick that heroin addiction. But my dad, Grady Baby Harrell Sr., he was never there. He was in and out of prison. And I didn't understand it until I got to be a grown man, that vibe that heroin is, you know. And that's why, thanks to my mother, we never got on any kind of drugs, because she was really trying to stop us from sinning when we were young, when we were about 11, 12, and we ran away from home. But because of her and because of the way she raised us in a God-fearing home, she promised us, if you want to sing, I'll let you sing, but promise me you'll never do drugs. We never did. So when we got to making money and doing things that we loved, I didn't think anything of it but that we're doing something that God has allowed us to do. So I never thought, and we grew up in L.A., so Hollywood was all around. And I never, ever thought more of myself than is necessary. And that's because of my mother, Evelyn Harrell.
Okay. All right. So your mother made sure that she kept you grounded.
Yes. Exactly.
And so those values stuck with you throughout your career.
Yes, even to this day. And I love her for that. She's 74 years young, and she's my best friend. And, of course, when I was 17, 18 years old, I didn't know what she was talking about, but now I know what she's talking about, and I thank her for guiding us into being some great adults, you know?
Right. Because that's not an easy thing to do, to be a single mother, as we know. Five kids, you know what I'm saying? You have 10 kids, but that's another whole show, so we're not going to get into that right now. What we are going to do is we are going to play this song called Harrell, H-A-R-R-E-L-L. Now, tell us a little bit about this song.
Well, I'm so family-oriented, and my sons and I, we always get together. Anthony's got a studio in his home, and we just get together, like I'm sure a lot of musical families do, and we just stick it, and we said, let's write a song about our family. So the hook goes, you know, it tells our name, H-A-R-E-L-L, and it goes, and tell everybody we all sing, and we're going to be a family through thick thin, and we got each other's back to the very end. And the verse explains itself. And then at the end, I start, you know, hollering like a Baptist preacher, and I'm naming all my kids in the order that they were born at the very end. So it's just about our family and how we love each other. It's called simply Harrell, our last name. We want you to remember us by being singers and musical.
Okay, here we go, Harrell.
Yeah.
Bam.
If you have to remember one thing, remember
H-A-R-R-E-L-L.
Tell everybody we all remember
H-A-R-R-E-L-L.
And we gon' be a family for 6 years. Remember
H-A-R-R-E-L-L.
Each other's back to the very end.
Remember
H-A-R-R-E-L-L. When I think about a family, I think L-O-V-E. So make sure y'all remember.
If you have to remember one thing,
remember
H-A-R-R-E-L-L.
And tell everybody we all remember
H-A-R-R-E-L-L.
And we gon' be a family for 6 years.
Remember
H-A-R-R-E-L-L. Back to the very end.
Remember
H-A-R-R-E-L-L.
brother, mother, and father. If you didn't know, well, hey, now you know. And that's the only way your family should roll. Don't you know blood is thicker than water? To be your sister, brother, mother, and father. If you didn't know, well, hey, now you know. And that's the only way your family should roll. First of all, a little granny.
Yeah, we were trying to get a little creative on that one. We was drinking our wine, sitting in the living room, trying to spit and think about what we going to write about. So we got a little egotistical and started writing about our own name. I'm sorry, y'all.
It worked. It worked. Because the message, you know what? It's all about the message. It's like, yeah. You know, we, if family, that's what we for, to have each other's back. And so,
right.
And if you can get that message across, then you know what I'm saying? Like you said, you might as well be a Baptist preacher, because that's what it is. It's about the message. You know what I'm saying? Get that message across. Family is supposed to have each other's back, okay?
Right,
so,
yeah.
Now, not only did Jackie Wilson have an impact on your career, but Sam Cooke also had an impact on you. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, I was a late bloomer. My mother was really, really strict. So I wasn't introduced to Sam Cooke, believe it or not, until 1984. Believe it or not. And my ex-girlfriend, her mother gave me an album with these Sam Cooke songs. I'm like, who is this cat? So I started doing my homework, and you know, I ended up playing Sam Cooke in a play over in LA for like about a year, which was beautiful. And I was trying to do the Sam Cooke story. I went out to Chicago to meet his brother, L.C., and you know, of course, Alan B. Klein and his family owns everything that has to do with Sam Cooke's music. And go figure, because Sam Cooke wrote all this music, but his ex-wife, Barbara, sold her last 50% to Alan Klein. And now Sam Cooke's music is worth so much, but it's owned by Alan B. Klein, who was a lawyer who used to represent the Rolling Stones. And he's dead now, but now his family owns all Sam Cooke's royalties and everything. And if you know anything
now, see,
about royalties.
That right there, that those kind of stories right there.
Woo! That hurts my heart
brings the militancy out in me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Because Sam Cooke, his whole thing when he was alive was that he did not want anybody else, RCA, to own the masters. He was the first big businessman even before Berry Gordy, if you want to do your research. So I love all people, but for a person who is not his family member, you know, to own all the rights to his songs, and he's still got family here. They got to go to Alan B. Klein if they need money or something to get a loan.
Wow.
But I talked to Sam Cooke's brother back in 1990 extensively. Alan B. Klein is, do your research and go on Google and Google Alan B. Klein. He owns all Sam Cooke's everything. So you cannot do a Sam Cooke movie without the music of Sam Cooke. And so we've been trying to get this movie done for years. And I'm so glad right now that this James Brown movie, this biopic of James Brown is being done. Because since Alan died now his son owns all, his family owns all Sam Cooke stuff. So sooner or later they're going to do the Sam Cooke movie, because it's a story. His story and Jackie Wilson's story has to be so told, along with the great Donnie Hathaway and Otis Redding. It's so many stories in the black community that need to be told.
Many.
Yes. Yeah, because we're trailblazers, you know?
pioneers. I mean, you know, I mean, the bottom line is, if it were not for these people and so many more that we have not named, there would not be music today as we know it. And it's just that simple.
Right,
it's just
baby.
That
it's
simple.
Right.
There would not be music today as
yeah.
we know it. Yeah, and I don't care what nobody thinks about it. The truth is the truth. Sometimes the truth hurts. I don't care. But the bottom line is, without black people, the America would not know music today as they know it. And that includes rock, pop, all of it. All of it, the great-great-great-grandmother was gospel. That's where it all came from. But that's,
right.
that's another show. That's another
yeah.
show, but that's the truth, though. So yep. now. Okay, let me get down off my soapbox for a minute.
Okay.
So now, I'm looking at the time; it's getting late. So, how briefly though, how would you compare Sam Cooke and Jackie Wilson?
Oh man, it's no comparison. They were both great black men, beautiful black men, talent, charisma. Vocals, everything. There's no comparison because they were so opposite, but their music and their stage presence speaks for itself. And I love them both about the same, but they were so different but so alike. Is that possible?
Yeah, that's absolutely possible because they were alike as far as charisma goes. Because
yeah.
when you saw Jackie Wilson and heard him, you knew, you know, when you heard his voice, that was him. Sam Cooke, same thing. When you heard his voice, you knew that was him. And he was
yeah.
so smooth, just like butter, baby. And I'm
yeah.
going to tell you one thing, Grady. You know, I am so proud of the fact, and I was so glad to have you on the show because you are someone who is carrying that torch, keeping that legacy alive, and that's what we need. And, you know, until the wheels fall off, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make sure that I can tell everybody, as many people that I can get to listen to me, like where it started from, what the foundation is. Now, what are you doing today? What's going on with Grady Harrell today?
I'm touring with my band, Groove City, and we're like a cover band, but I love it. And then I'm doing a lot of wonderful things right now. I'm putting together this our own Vegas show, and it's gonna be like a tribute to Smokey Robinson, Jackie Wilson, a tribute to James Brown, and a tribute to Michael Jackson with my son doing it. Then we're going to all come together and do a tribute to the Temptations. We're going to do that, and you're going to see us. We're going to bring it to life, I guess, in May at Sherry Gordy's. Sherry Gordy does this thing called Sherry Gordy Presents at the Club Tequila over at the Fiesta every Thursday night out here in Vegas. A lot of great entertainers come, and that's what – when I'm in town, I go there. And so she has so many wonderful entertainers, and her father came down, Berry Gordy came down one night, and you don't know who's going to come down, Smokey Robinson or all the Motown acts who are still alive. So Sherry Gordy is such a beautiful person, and we're going to do our thing there in May with this group. But in the meantime, I'm paying the bills by going on the road with my band. We play a lot of Indian casinos here on the West Coast. And I'm also, my son, Anthony, is a wonderful producer. He's going to produce because everybody keeps inboxing me on Facebook like, when are you going to put something out? So I'm going to put an EP out in the next 6 months, and my son Anthony Harrell is going to produce it for me. I want to do some new music.
All right. And I want to say, because, you know, once you get on YouTube, it takes you from one thing to another to another to another. So there was a clip of your songs singing, if I'm not mistaken, Undisputed Truth. It's hard to imagine. The Wildflower, you know, which one? You know the one I'm talking about. They did a cappella.
Who did
New Birth? New Birth.
Oh,
New Birth.
New Birth, right. Wildflower?
Your sons, right.
Oh, my sons.
Did Wildflower.
They got about 70 songs they did a cappella on YouTube.
Okay, well,
Wildflower
is one of them,
yeah.
and they are tearing it up.
Thank you,
okay,
man.
So all of y'all go check out Wildflower.
And
what will it say?
B-R-U-T-H-A, brother.
Yeah, okay, I'll check that out, because these boys, they are not missing a lick, and they are carrying the legacy along, and that's what it's all about. And Grady, you are so wonderful, and this has been
such a wonderful
interview, and I wish we had more time, but what we're going to go out on is, if it's all right with you, I'm going to let you choose. We got I Want You Back, we got Back in Love, Love Everything About You, and Touch the Hem. I take that back. I'm going to make an executive decision, and we're going to go out on the Groove City Band with you doing a tribute to James Brown. That's how we're going to go out. Is that all right with you?
I love it. I love that because rest in peace, Godfather.
You
were
tearing that up. And on YouTube, you was working hard. I saw you sweat and everything.
You and me, we come from that era where you had to sweat.
You had that leather on up under all them lights, baby, but it did not stop you. You took it right on out. And Grady, listen, I love you, and I want to talk to you again soon. Let's keep in contact.
Okay.
And in the meantime, when I get to Vegas, next time I come to Vegas, I'm going to call you and let you know I'm coming. I hope you're in town.
Yeah.
I want to come check something out with you in it.
If you come, you're welcome to stay here.
Oh,
so you don't have to pay
okay.
Absorbent hotel fee.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I hope my husband heard that. Okay, it's gonna be me, him, and my mama. How about that?
Okay, it's all good.
Okay,
yeah.
So we are going to go out on your tribute to James Brown with Groove City Band, and you keep on doing what you're doing. Don't you stop until the wheels fall off. You hear me?
Thank you. It's been a blessing talking to you. I love you, and Jehovah bless you forever.
I love you, too. Smooches. Here we go. Bam.
All right. Ooh, do it.
Yo, fella.
Yeah.
I think I want to get up and do my thing.
Yeah, brother.
Moving.
Yeah.
Grooving.
Uh-huh.
Doing it, man.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like a sex machine.
Yeah.
Can I count it off?
Count it off.
Can I count it off?
Count it off.
1, 2, 3, 4. Get up. Defense.
got a brand new back. I feel good, like I knew that I would now. I feel good, like I knew that I would now. All right. So good, so good. I got you. Hey, I feel nice, like sugar and spice. I feel nice, like sugar and spice. Good night. So nice, so nice. I got you.
We're gonna have a funky tonight. Get your phone.